ברוכים הבאים to a weekly show, לאחד עודי, the chariot radio, we in parashat bo, בעזרת השם יתברך, be speaking about the parasha a little bit, and then we'll take your questions and answers, בעזרת השם יתברך. Today, we're learning about paro, and we want to learn today something that has nogea very much to us as well. You know, that the Mefarshim says that each and every one of us has a small paro in his heart. And this is not something that's made up in the Baalei HaMusar. It's actually a Rambam, as we're going to see right now. And this story of Paro in Mitzrayim actually has a lot of Musar to teach us, because each and every one of us could be very much like that Paro that was in Mitzrayim. And in order to understand this correctly, we'll go a little bit backwards to last week's parasha, when Paro is meeting with Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu goes and being sent to Paro over and over again. Every Makkah, Moshe Rabbeinu is first going to Paro to threaten him, to warn him, to give him a warning. And then afterwards, Paro calls him in a few of the Makkot. He calls him a few of the Makkot. He doesn't call him. Or Chaim HaKadosh explains why. Maybe we'll touch into it. And in last week, Parasha, when Moshe Rabbeinu is asked to come to Paro, it says in the Pasuk, right after the Makkah of Arov, this Makkah was very harsh on Paro. So it says in the Pasuk that the whole land was destroyed because of that. Vayas Adonai ken vevo Arov kafet bet Paro vet avadav v'chol eretz Mitzrayim tishachet haaretz mipnei Arov. So Paro right away calls Moshe Rabbeinu. V'ekra Paro el Moshe ul'Aaron ve'omer lechu zivchu le'elohechem ba'aretz. Up to now, Paro wasn't willing to hear from Moshe Rabbeinu anything. When Moshe Rabbeinu says, we want to worship Hashem, Paro says, what are you talking about? There's no such thing. And now Paro softens up a little bit. He says to Moshe Rabbeinu, fine, go and bring zvachim le'elokechem ba'aretz. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, 1 minute. We got things wrong over here. We're not doing it over here in the land. We want to go out of Mitzrayim and do it out of the land of Mitzrayim. ואומר משה, לא נכון לעשות כן, כי תואבת מצרים נסבח לאדוני אלוהינו, נסבח את תואבת מצרים לעיניהם ולא יסכלונו. We need to get out of Mitzrayim, give us a three days distance, and we do it over there. We bring קורבנות to הקדוש ברוך הוא over there. דרך שלושת ימים נלך במדבר, וזבחנו לאדוני אלוהינו כאשר אמר אלינו. We're going a 3 days distance, and we're going to worship Hashem over there, and we bring korbanot to Hashem over there. That's the way we want to do it. Paro softened up because of the makot. It was very harsh on him, but not that much. You want to go out of Mitzrayim 3 days? That you can't do. You can't go out. The place over there is closed, and we don't allow anybody out. You're not allowed to get out. Forget about it. Va'omer Paro. At that point, Paro was willing to let him go. ואומר פרעה, אנוכי אשלח אתכם, וזבחתם לאדוני אליכם במדבר, רק הרחיקו, תרחיקו, ללכת, תראו בידי. On that point, Moshe Rabbeinu Paro is willing to let Moshe Rabbeinu go. But as soon as the Paro, as the Makkah gets out of Paro, as soon as Moshe Rabbeinu asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take the Makkah away from Paro, ויכבד פרעה את ליבו גם הפעם הזאת, ולא שילח, he changes his mind. He says, we can't do it. We're not sending you. Forget about it. You can't go out of the land of Mitzrayim. This was the Makkah of Arov. Now we're getting into our parasha. And in our parasha, we see this again and again. This story goes on. In the beginning of the parasha, Moshe Rabbeinu comes again to Paro. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, bo el Paro, ki anichbati et libo ve et lev avadav. And he threatens him that he brings the arbeh. And this arbeh is going to be destructive to the land. וחיסה את עין הארץ, לא יוכל לראות את הארץ, אכל את יתר הפלטה, נשארת לכם מן הברד, ואכל את כל עץ הצומח לכם מן השדה. Terrible, terrible מכה. So the slaves of Paro came to Paro and they tell him, let the person go, let them go already, let them go. They're destroying the whole land. ויום הוא עבדי פרו אליו, עד מתי יזה לנו למוקש, שלח את האנשים, let them go. What they want? They want to go for 3 days to bring קורבנות to Hashem? Let them go, let them do it. הטרם תדע כי עבדה מצרים, otherwise we all destroyed over here. So Moshe Rabbeinu is brought back to Paro, and Paro again is softened up. ויושב את משה ואת אהרון אל פרעה, ויאמר עליהם, פיין, פיין, לכו עבדו את אדוני אלוהיכם, מי ומי ההולכים. פיין, I'll let you go. Last time I changed my mind, this time I'm not going to change my mind, you could go, go do what you need to do, let me out of this מכות, I don't want to mess with you anymore, I had it, go. ויאמר משה, משה tells him, this is the plan, בנערינו ובזקננו נלך, בבננו ובבנותינו, בצוננו ובבקרנו נלך, כי חג אדוני לנו. משה רבנו gives him a list, this is the people that we're going to take, we're going to take the youth, we're going to take the elderly, we're going to take the boys, we're going to take the girls, we're going to take צוננו ובקרנו, everybody's going, we're all going over there. Paro says, one minute, that much I didn't say, you're going to bring korbanot, what do you need to take the youth for? Youth could stay over here, the tough, the baby, the children, they need to go with you, there's no purpose of them going. ואומר אליהם, יחן אדוני עמכם כאשר שלח אתכם ותפכם, ראו כי ראה נגד פניכם. Which means, over here, Paro tells him that I can't let you go completely with everybody. You can't go everybody. You're just going the gvarim. The next pasuk. Lochen. Lechu na gvarim v'ivdu et Adonai. Ki ota atem mevakshim. Which means, Rashi says, Lochen kasher amartem lo lechataf imachem. Ela lechu agvarim v'ivdu et Adonai. Which means, you can't take the children. What's the purpose of taking the children? Children are not going to bring sacrifices. What are you taking the children for? Moshe Rabbeinu tells him, we're not, there's nothing doing. We're going children and adults. That's the way we're going. Paro says, no deal. Fine. No deal. Vaygaresh otam me'et penei Paro. They leave. They go. So this was the second interaction, back and forth with Paro. Negotiation, nothing doing. Third negotiation, next makah. ויקרא פרעה אל משה ויאמר לכו עבדו את אדוני רק צונכם ובקרכם יוצא גם תפכם ילך עמכם. This is after the מכת חושך. מכת חושך, 3 days, complete darkness in מצרים, nobody sees anything, the place is completely shut down, מצרים is completely not operating. פרעה comes to משה רבנו, he calls פרעה, calls משה רבנו, ויקרא פרעה אל משה and he tells him, fine, the negotiation is on your side, on your the ball is on your court, go, fine, you wanted to take the children, go take the children. ויקרא פרעה אל משה ואומר לכו עבדו את אדוני רק צונכם ובקרכם יוצק גם תפכם ילך עמכם. The tough, the children can go with you, but leave over here your cattle, you don't need to take the cattle, what are you taking cattle? Cattle you can leave over here, right? So משה רבנו comes and tells פרעה, ואומר משה, גם אתה תיתן בידינו זבחים ועולות, ועשינו לאדוני אלינו. Not only that we're taking our cattle, but you are adding to that also from yourself. You're going to give us also. That is the deal. We're taking everything. We're taking our children. We're taking the elderly. We're taking the boys. We're taking the girls. We're taking the זבחים. We're taking עולות. And also on top of that, you also going to give us some zvachim and olot in order that we can sacrifice with them to Hashem. Gam miknenu yelech imanu, lo tishaer parsa, ki mimenu nikach la'avod et Adonai Eloheinu, v'anachnu lo neda ma na'avod et Adonai et bo'enu shama. So Paro over here doesn't agree. That much I don't agree. V'chazek Adonai et lef Paro, v'lo aval l'shalecham. No, he's not sending, no deal. It's very strange what's going on over here. Negotiation over negotiation. Paro is being asked to do one thing and then pushed another thing and then pushed another thing. What goes on over here? Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Paro the first time. He tells him all we need to go is 3 days. Let us go 3 days, bring some sacrifices, come back. Paro doesn't, he agrees, then he changes his mind. Then afterwards he tells him, I want to take the children. Paro doesn't agree with the children. Then he tells him, fine, take the children. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, 1 minute. I want you to add to that cattle as well. What's going on over here? Isn't it more correct that Moshe Rabbeinu would come to Paro in the very beginning, tells him exactly, should tell him exactly what he wants. This is my wish list. This is my request. This is my demand. I want to go out of Mitzrayim. I'm taking with me everybody. I'm taking the children. I'm taking the adults. I'm taking the elderly. I'm taking boys and girls. I'm taking cattle. And you're going to add to that as well. and I have a whole list of things you're going to give me. Why does Moshe Rabbeinu needs to negotiate in such a way? Anyway, Paro is not listening. Paro is not going to be able to soften his heart because Hashem said that that's it. Paro is doomed. That's it. Paro is not letting you go. Paro is straightening his heart, and I'm going to bechazek et libo. Nothing's going to happen with Paro. So why Moshe Rabbeinu is again negotiating every time a little bit more, tell him from the beginning whatever it is, end the scene and goodbye. And in order to understand how things work over here, we really need to understand first, why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu is asked to go to Paro again and again when we know already in advance that Paro is not going to be able to change his mind? Moshe Rabbeinu was told, Hashem told him, straight out, not one time and not two times. Moshe Rabbeinu Hashem keeps on saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, Paro is not going to change his mind. Chizakti et libo, I strengthened his heart, and he's not changing his way. He's not changing his mind. He's not going to let you go. So therefore, what's the purpose over here that he sends him again and again to Paro? Who asked this question? The Rambam in Hilchot Tshuva asked this question, and he says a magnificent answer. He says, first of all, with the introduction, that you need to know that it's possible for a person to sin a big sin or small sins, but over and over again, that the punishment for that would be that they'll take away the ability to do tshuva, which means there's all kind of different punishments that Hashem has to give when he wants to punish somebody. Sometimes it's a punishment with suffering, sometimes it's a different kind of punishments. One of the punishments that Hashem could give, Lo Aleinu, is to take away the ability from somebody to do tshuva. It's possible to have such a thing. And therefore, in order to get such a terrible, terrible punishment, the person needs to do either one very big sin or a lot of sins, a lot of small sins. This is how the Rambam says it over here. Efshar. שיחטא אדם חטא גדול או חטאים רבים עד שייתן הדין לפני דיין האמת שיהיה פירעון מזה החוטא על חטאים אלו שעשה ברצונו ודעתו שמונעים ממנו התשובה. If a person sins in the way we spoke, sometimes they take away the punishment for that would be that they take away the ability to do תשובה ואין מניחים לו לרשות לשוב מרשעותו כדי שימות ויובד בחטאו שיעשה. And the Rambam brings all kind of פסוקים to prove that from different Nevi'im and different places in the Torah. And therefore says the Rambam, this is what happened to Paro. לפיכך כתוב בתורה, ואני אחזק את לב פרו, לפי שחטא מעצמו, תחילה והראה לישראל הגרים בארצו, שנאמר אבא נתחכמה לו. Since Paro sinned, a very big sin in the beginning, he tortured Am Israel, he killed Am Israel, he enslaved Am Israel, he did all kind of terrible things to Am Israel. The punishment for that, says the Rambam, was that Hashem took away the ability to do tshuva. And therefore, ניתן הדין למנוע תשובה ממנו עד שיפרע ממנו. לפיך חיזק הקדוש ברוך הוא את ליבו. And if that's the case, so wonderful. So the Rambam wants to know the question we started. Why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu is being asked again and again to go to Paro? There's no purpose for it. There's no purpose for it. He's not changing his mind. So why is it again and again and again and again? There's no purpose for it. Says the Rambam, למה היה שולח לו ביד משה? ואומר שלח ועשה תשובה. כבר אמר לו הקדוש ברוך הוא אין אתה משלח. שנאמר, ואתה ועבדיך ידעתי, אולם בעבור זאת מתיך. Says the Rambam, unbelievable yesod. What is the purpose that Moshe was sent again and again if there's no chance to do tshuva? If Hashem took that ability away from Paro, he says, it's not for Paro at all. It's not for Paro at all. The only reason that's being done is in order to be able to write it in the Torah, to inform everybody in the world of such a concept that it's possible that a person would do something over and over again, is not going to be able to change what he's doing. Says the Rambam, כדי להודיע לבאי עולם, the whole story of Yehov of Mitzrayim, of Parashat Vayera, Parashat Bo, and Parashat Beshalach next, when Paro is running after Am Yisrael, although he sent them already, he's running and he's changing his mind. Why is that? להודיע לבאי עולם, to inform everybody in the world, שבזמן שמונע הקדוש ברוך הוא התשובה לחוטא, אינו יכול לשוב, אלא ימות ברשעו, שעשה מתחילה ברצונו. This whole story of Mitzrayim over here, this whole story of Paro is inform us that it's possible that a person will come to the point of no return, a person would come to the point that he's doing terrible things, that Hashem would take the ability away from him, that he's not going to be able to change his behavior. And this is basically the story of Paro. And when we come to this story, now we can understand what's happening in the parasha. Why is Hashem sending Moshe Rabbeinu again and again, and with that, to every time try to negotiate a little bit more when it's a lost game? We know in the beginning it's a lost game. So why are you negotiating a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit? He's not, even if you don't negotiate, he's not letting you go. Even if you don't ask anything, he's not letting you go. Why do you need to ask a little bit more, a little bit more? And this is something that we need to know and learn for us, because the Rambam says this whole parashiyot are made for us in order for us to understand the lo'odia lechol be'olam, this concept. And this concept, I think, in a way, is called also something that's an addiction. We call it an addiction. Somebody that's doing something over and over again, he becomes dependent on that thing. Whenever a person is in needs of a certain thing because he got to do it over and over again, he became very dependent on that thing. We know addictions in a very severe way. Let's say, for instance, alcohol. When a person needs that substance of alcohol, is dependent on it. When a person can't feel well without having it, he becomes addicted. When do you know when a person is addicted? If he's so dependent on it that he doesn't have it, he feels unwell, he feels restless, he feels anxiety, he feels depressed, he feels unhappy. It affects him in terrible ways. And even when he's having it, if you see that this dependency on those substances would change his life to the worse, which means it would affect his family life, it would affect his work, he would affect his sleep, he would affect his thoughts, anything that he would affect, such a thing, it's considered an addiction, and it's something that's not good for the person, and he needs to get healed from that as soon as he can. And therefore, over here, this is the story that we're talking about. In this parasha, Paro over here was dependent on those, on Am Yisrael, whether it was a feeling of kavod that he needed, and once Am Yisrael are gone, he wouldn't be able to get that. Whether it's the feeling of being in charge of a nation, whether it's a feeling of abusing other people, there's all kind of dependencies that a person might have. But sometimes a person that would do it over and over again, he needs it. If he doesn't have it, his life is not the same. Over here, we see that Paro can't let them go. He can't let them go because he got that point of no return. The people are trying to tell him, look, it's affecting our being, our well-being. They're telling him, let them go. This addiction is destroying us. This is we are completely being destroyed by it. And Paro, although he wants to make the right move, he tries to make the right move. He calls Moshe Rabbeinu and he tries to let the people go. And a few times he told them, go. And still, whenever the Makah gets out, his need comes back to him, and it doesn't allow him to go ahead and change that for the better. And therefore, Paro is completely stuck. Comes the Rambam and says, we need to know that there's such a concept that kol odia lechol ba'e olam, that a person could get to that point. Now, the Rambam is talking about when HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes away the ability from a person to do tshuva. But don't forget that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Teva. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in the world such an ability that a person that would do something over and over again is not going to be able to change. That's why a person that says, Echtav Ashuv, En Maspikim Be'ado La'asot Tshuva. Why? Because a person that's doing it again and again, although he wants to do Tshuva, but he became already so accustomed to it, he can't change it. It becomes so, so hard. So therefore, the punishment for that sometimes would be that a person can't change that. And that's why when a person is Choteh, so we see that such a person, the Gemara says, Nasa lo keter, he doesn't feel anymore that he's doing something wrong. And although we see that it's affecting his life in so many negative ways, so many terrible ways, such a thing sometimes is beyond the ability of a person, and he really, really needs to seek help as much as he can in order to fix that problem. Now, what is the addiction that we all are in the danger of today? There's all different kinds of addictions, but today there's a new addiction in our generation. There's a new addiction that takes over. It's not like alcohol that is only for the few. It's not like drugs that it's only for the few. It's not like other addictions that only few are falling into it. But today there's an addiction called a cell phone. Today people are addicted to their cell phone. And how could we know that one is addicted? We'll see if those same laws of addiction that happened with alcohol or drugs apply to the cell phone as well. Is a person able to function without his cell phone? What happens if he doesn't have the cell phone? Does he feel restless? Does he feel anxious? Does he feel that he's missing something? He can't handle it without it. He forgot his cell phone, chas v'shalom, in a house, and his wife sends him for shopping for half an hour. He drives 10 minutes in a car, and then he realizes that terrible, terrible thing that he forgot the cell phone in the house. So what would he do? It's nishgefelach. He would keep on going. It's only half an hour of shopping. I come back. Nothing has happened. No, the world is not coming to an end. Nothing emergency is going to happen in that time. The chazakah is that within the last 10 years, the cell phone didn't save your life. You didn't save anybody else's life. So it's not going to happen just punct on this half an hour. Or you say, I can't. He have to go back. And he makes a U-turn and goes back home. He spent 10 minutes going back home and 10 minutes coming back, because he can't have it without the cell phone. What happens if the battery dies? People panicking. If he gets to 23% already, people don't know what to do with themselves. And they have to go around and they change all their day schedule in order to fix that problem that they have. What would happen if a person needs to go to sleep? Where does he put the cell phone? Is it right by his bed? Or it could be put in the kitchen. Nothing happened. Let it charge in the kitchen. Or it needs to be right by the bed. He can't let go on the cell phone. Today, that addiction became so terrible, so horrible, that people have it with their prayer right by their pocket. As soon as they take back three steps or say shalom b'imomav, vloop, they take off the cell phone. Let's see what have happened. It was already 5 minutes that I didn't look at the cell phone. Could be a text, could be a this, could be that, could be a million different things. Let's see what happened. Obviously, we're not talking today about filtering the phone. That's a different issue. We're talking about right now when it's a kosher phone, no problem, no issues of tzniut, no issues of any surim that are involved in that. That's a different topic. That's a horrible, horrible thing that needs to be spoken by itself. But today, we're just talking about a kosher phone with all the filters possible. Even then, we're saying over here that people are so addicted. I go to Avot Ubanim, you see people take out their phones, they're learning with their boys. You're sitting down for half an hour to learn with your boys. You didn't see your boy for the whole week. You come in to demonstrate a little bit learning Torah to your boy, how it's important to sit down and learn Torah. People take their cell phones. They need to text and they need to see all kinds of things. What's the urgency? You sit in shul, chazarat hashatz. People take their phones and they're looking all kinds of things. Some people can't even pray without their cell phone. There's no mean they wouldn't take a siddur. They have a siddur. They need to pray with the cell phone. It's such an addiction that people can't let their eyes off the phone. And it became so terrible that today it's affecting families, that you sit with your wife and either the wife or the husband, instead of talking to each other, their eyes are on the cell phone. They're doing things. They don't have time for each other. People going out with their husband, with their wife, to sit in a restaurant. They're sitting in a restaurant, and you see people, instead of talking to each other, you didn't see each other. You're going out a little bit to build a relationship, to have a good time. Instead of that, people are on the cell phone. People are going to dates to find the shidduch. They're on the cell phones. You see people walking in the street. They're taking a walk, a husband and a wife. They're taking a walk. And you see them on the cell phone. It's an unbelievable thing to spend a little bit time together. So it's affecting families. It's affecting parents. It's affecting every aspect of life. It's affecting our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the tefillah, in the learning. It's affecting the time that we're spending with our children. And it's even worse than that, in a way, that you see that you drive on a highway and It's unbelievable. You drive on a highway and you see so many people driving on the wheel with the cell phone right there, looking, watching, texting, calling. People are busy on their cell phone while they're on the highway. It's so dangerous. One time I was driving on a highway coming back from Pennsylvania with my family, and we were driving, and I see a person ahead of me swinging from one lane to another. He wasn't changing a lane. He was like swinging from one place to another. Like for 10 minutes, we were driving behind him. We didn't want to go ahead of him because it was so dangerous. And we thought that the person is either sleepy or either high on something or maybe drunk or something else. Then in the end, after 10 minutes, we just made it through and we passed him. And we took a look, and long and short, what was he on? He was on the fast cell phone. That's it, on the cell phone. So dangerous. He so many times bumped into different cars, into the wall. Nothing doing. The people are completely so addicted to it. So that's what we're learning over here. Over here, we're learning that when it comes to an addiction, there's two ways how to get away from an addiction. Sometimes when it's something very severe, a person needs to completely cut it off. Completely cut it off. And that's what happened with Paro. Nothing would help with him. And therefore, when he got the makot, the Or Chaim HaKadosh explains that there's different kinds of makot that Paro got. Whenever he threatened his life, Paro called Moshe Rabbeinu and asked him for help. Whenever he didn't threaten his life, so Paro was well. Like, for instance, by makat dam, he wasn't a life-threatening to Paro. Why? Because he had water whenever he wanted to buy from Am Yisrael, he could have bought. It was very uncomfortable, but he didn't die. He didn't feel fear for his life, and therefore he didn't ask for help. By Makat Tzfardea, he asked for Moshe Rabbeinu, Atiru, Al Hashem, help me out. Why? Because it came in the stomachs of the people. Bekirbo, it says the Pasuk, Chazal say, it came into the stomachs of the very dangerous. And so was all the Makot. With those that Makot that endangered his life, he felt life danger, he asked Moshe Rabbeinu for help. Whenever it comes to such a thing that you see that you have to cut it out, you have to cut it out completely. But whenever something could be handled, Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching us over here how to handle it. Because the Rambam explained to us everything that's happening in those parashiot is for us. Leodia lechol ba'e olam. It comes to tell us. It's not for Paro. Those parashiot, leodia lechol ba'e olam. And therefore, since it's leodia lechol ba'e olam, that concept that we're talking about, it's also leodia lechol ba'e olam, how to work it out as well. And how do you do that? You push a little bit more and push a little bit more. By a Paro, it's not going to help. But it wasn't given, those warnings and those makot were not given for Paro. It was given to inform us, leodia lechol ba'e olam. If it's informing us, it has to inform us as well how to fix that problem. And how do you fix that problem? Moshe Rabbeinu tells us, you push a little bit more at a time. In the beginning, you tell him, let us go for 3 days. Can you handle 3 days? Yes, 3 days I can handle. Go. Then Paro changes his mind because Hashem took away that ability from him. But a person that's addicted could do 3 days. Let's do half an hour without the cell phone. Can you do half an hour without the cell phone? Yeah, half an hour I can do. Do it. Half an hour. Then Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, now we want to go with the children. Paro says, no, no children. Take the adults. Adults you can do? Yes. Then children. Push the children a little bit more. Then take the children, take the adults. Moshe Rabbeinu says, 1 minute. Now we want also tzonenu bifkarenu. Not only that, you give us also. Push a little bit more at a time. And therefore, slowly, slowly, you take away that addiction. We need to know that that addiction called the cell phone destroys our families, destroys our Yiddishkeit, because there are many, many kids today that can't handle that addiction, that on Shabbat, they go into the room and they texting each other. They can't help it out. They come back from shul. They just made kiddush. They keep all the Shabbat. When it comes to this, they can't handle it. They're going to the bedroom and nobody notices and nobody sees, and they're texting friends and they can't handle without it. It destroys everything do good that we have. It's a family life. It's addiction that endangers us on the roads. It's an addiction that endangers the Shabbat and so many more avenues that we need to fix. And this is the way that Moshe Rabbeinu teaches us. Let's try to take one step at a time and make sure that we give the examples to our family, to our children, parents who speak to each other, not to the cell phones. Not look at the cell phones when you speak to each other. When you go to shul, that's the way you should. And even if you see that your child is not there, Your child could be in the house and he knows exactly he's tati in the shul at 18, looks at the cell phone, he doesn't need look at the cell phone. He knows what kind of tati he has. He knows what kind of mommy he has. And this is how he's going to, he doesn't need to see it. He knows. Children know. They feel it. They sense it. They saw it here. They saw it there. They know already. My father doesn't touch the phone from the minute he gets to shul to the minute he gets out of shul. When he learns with me, there's no cell phone. The cell phone could ring 100 times. Right now, it's learning time. He designated half an hour for learning with me. Nothing is going to budge. Nothing is going to move that. When a kid knows that, when a kid feels that, that grows up to be somebody that can handle those addictions. But when a kid sees that the father is on the phone, he gets a phone call, so he stops the learning right away. He goes to the cell phone, he talks for 2 minutes, then he calls back to the learning. So he knows there's something more important than the learning. That's a call. If your father got a call, so he needs to pick it up. He got a text, he needs to pick it up. The kid realizes, he gets the ideas of what's more important and what's less important. Cell phone is more important than learning Torah. Cell phone is more important than Chazarat Hashatz. Cell phone is more important than mommy. And therefore he gets to understand that and bring it into his lifestyle as well. He's going to grow to be such a person, could be worse. And therefore we need to fix that problem as soon as we can right now. Whenever we are with our family, there's no cell phone. It shuts off or you ignore it completely. And even when we are with ourselves, we need to make sure to work on it, that it's not going to become such an addiction that's going to take over our life. Thank you for listening for Divrei Torah. After the following song, Be'ezrat Hashem Yitbarach, we'll take questions and answer the studio. The phone number over here, 718-683-5858. 718-683-5858. Our text is 347-927-8398.
Call now, show.
Okay, we're back again. Our phone number again, for those that want to call, 718-683-5858. And those that text us, you're welcome to text at 347-927-8398. It's interesting, we always get much more texts than calls. People should call, no problem at all. So the first question I have over here in front of me, if a goita was alone, was home alone when everyone went to a wedding, does kitchen become treif? Which means goita is a goy. She left the cleaning lady or whatever it is, the help in the house alone. Does it become treif? So we need to know that the Shulchan Aruch brings down such a thing that a person is not allowed to leave his shifcha in the house alone. It says that in Yoreh Deah Siman Kuf Yudchet that yesh lachmir shelo laniach et gederot by the shifcha alone in the house, which means when you leave her alone, she might use those utensils that you have and make them treif, because whatever she cooks in them would make a treif right away. So let's say she wants to make herself an egg. Very innocent. Nothing wrong, right? No wrong. An egg, making an egg would make the pot treif. Therefore, the halacha in Shulchan Aruch says one should not leave her alone unless it's such a case that she goes in and out, you go in and out of the house. When you go in and out of the house, then she was informed that she's not allowed to use the utensils, she's not allowed to touch those things. Then she has a certain fear from using it, then it's mutal. But lechatchila, one is not allowed. But over here, the question is bedieved. So Rav Moshe speaks about this after he gives a musar that it's asur to leave her alone. He says, the bedieved, we can allow it after the kelim are waited 24 hours, because then it becomes pagum, and pagum is only isur de rabbanan. We allow it in such a case. But this is only if a person did it already bedieved. So the question to the answer over here, the answer to the question, if the goita was alone when everyone went to a wedding, does the kitchen become treif? You have to wait 24 hours, and then you can use the kitchen. But lechatchila, don't do it unless she knows somebody might come into the house right away. Next question, where is the Rambam? The Rambam is in Ilchot Tshuva on the 7th Perek. Next, we have a call. Let's take the call. We haven't. Hello.
Oh, yeah, hi. I have peanuts, and around the peanuts is like a crunch and like some sriracha spice on it. What bracha do I make on that?
You have a peanut, and surrounding the peanut, you have a what?
It's like this crunch around
Okay, it's like those Israeli peanut. Right. It's interesting that those things.
I'm
in it
already.
That's the bracha. But it's interesting that that those things, if you go to Israel, it's called American peanuts. But in America, you're not going to find them unless they came from Israel, or at least that's where it was invented. So anything that wants to go good in Eretz Israel, they call it American. But in America, you're not necessarily going to find it. It's like sushi. You want to buy sushi? It's made by it's a Japanese food. But if you go to any sushi place, they'll put you over there a Chinese to make it, like they are the professionals. But in China, you're not going to find this food, probably. It all comes from Japan. Right. But yes, you're right. Whenever you have mezonot, so the halacha is that kol shesh bo mechameshet minei dagan, it becomes the ikar, and that's the bracha you're going to make on it. So that was correct. Let's take the next caller, b'chavod. We have over here another question. Let me roll it down. We lost it. The question is, are you supposed to stand up and bow down by Baruch Hu? So you need to know like this. The Biur Halacha brings down in the Navi, it's a Biur Halacha in Kuf Yud Gimel, that in the Navi it's brought down that everybody bowed down when they said Baruch Hu et Hashem Amvorach. So the Biur Halacha does bring such a thing down. But the Poskim Sfaradim say that there's no such a minhag, and a person doesn't need to bow down. And actually, it says in the Shulchan Aruch that you're not allowed to bow down at a place that the Chazal didn't say to bow down. You're only allowed to bow down where Chazal said that one needs to bow down. Bowing down in other places is not allowed. So over here, the Biur Halacha tries to explain that since the Pasuk says that David told everybody, Baruch Hu et Hashem Avorach, and everybody bowed down, so this is like openly in the Pasuk, one can do it. But if you take a look at the Ohel Etzion Chacham Ovadia, they say that one should not should not bow down. Next question. Okay. Next question, we have a caller. B'chavod. Yeah, go ahead. Hello?
Yeah, yes. I wanted to know, can you use a salt shaker that has uncooked rice in it?
I see. On Shabbos you're talking about. You're talking about the Sur of Borer. Okay, I got you. Okay, so many times they put salt in the rice in the salt shaker, and the question is maybe it's Borer because you're using that shaker and it's Borer, it's separating the salt from the rice. Rav Eliashiv says that it's not a problem because it's not that you want to be Borer, that's not a kli that made to be Borer the rice from it. You're only putting the rice over there, but you're not meaning to be Borer the thing, and therefore he allowed such a thing. He says it's mutal. Let's take the next question over here on the text. If we prayed at the shul without a minyan and someone walks in after we finish, can we say Chazarat Hashatz? Okay, so if people had no minyan, they started praying, and then after Shmones, or even later than that, somebody walks in, all of a sudden, they have now 10 people. What's the halacha in that? There's halacha in Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Peitet. It's called Pores al Shema. See, the halacha in Pores al Shema, the Shulchan Aruch says, that one is allowed to do afterwards, in Siman Samechtet. One is allowed to do afterwards Chazarat Hashatz with those people that came all together. Even if one didn't hear, you're allowed to do. That's how the Shulchan Aruch holds in Samechtet. But the Radbaz brings down that once the people prayed Beyechidi, Parach Mimeno Kaddish VeKedusha, they lost out the Kaddish, the Kedusha, the Chazara. They lost out on everything. And even more than that, if they do it, it's considered Bracha Levatala. What's the Halacha Lemaseh? Ben Ish Chai brings down to be choshesh for this Radbaz, and he says that they shouldn't do such a thing except the Kaddish Al Israel afterwards. Ben Ish Chai allows that, but everything else he says one should not do. And Chacham Ovadia is more lenient with that. So therefore, we have over here these two opinions, if you could do or you can do. Next question. We have a caller, B'chavad.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to know, are you allowed to take sleeping pills on Shabbos?
Sleeping pills on Shabbos, Rav Shlomo Zalman allows. He says that it's not, also Chacham Ovadia brings down, that it's allowed. It's not considered a medicine. A person doesn't take it as a medicine. Whatever is not taken as a medicine, it's mutar, especially somebody that really can fall asleep. It could be that it's considered in a way that it's very disrupting. It's considered maybe like a chole, and therefore chole doesn't have to actually be chole. We're saying in the Shulchan Aruch, the taich for chole and shin kafret is somebody that has one evil, one part of the body that's hurting him so much that he has to lie down because of that. So Rav Nissim Karelix explains, if the level is that if a person can't operate the way he would operate normally, so that's already considered for that aspect as chole she'en bo sakana. Therefore, this will be allowed to take according to the opinions that I just mentioned before. Let's take the next caller. B'chavad. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Hi.
Are you gonna play Scrabble on Shabbos?
Can you explain to me what the game is? I'm not so familiar.
It's that you write words with pieces.
You put pieces together to form words.
Yeah.
Okay, so forming words, as long as it's not attached in any way, Moshe Feinstein says that there's no Isur of Kotev. The only time you have Isur of Kotev is if it attaches one to the other in any form of way, but putting one close to the other has no problem of Kotev. Okay, let's take the next caller. We have it. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
Yes, hi. I'd like to give you a big shukriah for the drosha. It was wonderful, and it hit home. Hopefully, everyone listening will take the advice of the Rav, and they should minimize the use of the cell, which kills mamish, families, husband and wife and children. They learn terrible things. So, yishkoyach.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the good word. Okay, we have the next caller, Bechavad. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hi, you're on there.
Yes. If you're makpid not to drink the water out of filter, is there a problem taking water from the filter on Shabbos?
Okay, so the filter is a two-way issue. One issue is if you have a New York water, and that is an issue of kashrut already, can you use water without a filter? And if you posek like most of the Gdolei Israel, like of David Feinstein, like of Eliashiv, that the water over here needs to be filtered. So then you have a question of filtering on Shabbat. And although there seems to be a leniency in the Chochmat Adam that wants to say there's a difference between filtering bad from good and filtering Isur from Eter, Isur is like a Arya Raviale, this is how the Chochmat Adam suggests, but it doesn't seem like this is the pshat, as you can see from the Sefer of Rabelski, Shulchan Alevi, that it goes into explaining that you can't explain this at all for that Chochmat Adam. But if we're talking about drinking water that normally a person could drink, and he just likes to drink it a little bit better, so then it says in Shin Yutet that water that is drinkable, one is allowed to filter it, it's not a problem. You need to know that today there's an issue with filtering, and this issue was brought to Rav Eliashiv, and the filtering is that whenever you filter something, there's carbon in the filter that sweetens a little bit the water's taste, and whenever the water gets there, it gets to the point that you can't drink it at all. It's disgusting, it becomes black, it becomes something you can't drink, and once it passes through the filtering, then it becomes sweet and clean and good. Now, if a person just puts something right away through the filter and drinks it, that's called the din of a meshameret that the Shulchan Aruch allows, because it just passes through. It goes in clean, it comes out cleaner. It comes out cleaner. That's fine, although in the middle it became very dirty. But Rav Eliashiv says that's only if while you were putting it in, it went through and then you come in to drink it. But what happens if you have a filter in your house and you shut down the water, and then when you come to drink, you put a cup under the faucet and you're opening the faucet. Meanwhile, as the whole time that you didn't use it, it sat down together with that dirt that was in the filter. Rav Eliashiv says that's not the same as the meshameret, that it goes through as clean water and comes out as cleaner water, because at that point it was some water that you can't drink. And therefore, Rav Eliashiv held that is something you're not allowed to use on Shabbat. You're not allowed to filter, to use such filtered water on Shabbat. So the answer to the question is, you have over here different issues, depends what you're filtering, what's the reason of the filtering, and how it's done. The way to use such a thing and without the problem that Rav Eliashiv aroused is that one should let the water open the faucet for a couple of seconds to let that water from the filter come out. Once this came out, this is not water you're going to use, and the rest of the water is going to be water that came in fresh right now from the pipe, and therefore such a thing would be okay. Next question, Bechavot. Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I'd like to know how long can you still start fast and it's called filibuster?
I didn't hear what you said again, please.
How long could you start minute and it's still called filibuster?
Okay, so over here you have various opinions. According to the way Rav Moshe writes, he's very lenient about it. Even if you come in the end, when everybody's still in Shmoneser in their end, and you start then, that is still fine. And there are opinions that say that you need to start more or less together with the Tzibur. Actually, the Mishnah Berurah says that one lechatchila should start with the Tzibur mamish. He says that whenever they start, you should start at the same time. Obviously, we're talking about a couple of seconds here, a couple of seconds there, but you should start at the same time, more or less. But concerning your question, we're saying over here that there are those opinions that say that as long as you started when the Tzibur is still praying, that is okay, according to Ramoshe and a bunch of other poskim that call it tefillah b'tzibur. Another question over here is, are you allowed to eat Ricola on Shabbos? Ricola is not necessarily a medicine, because people take that also, I think, people take that also not for medicine, because it tastes good. So I know people that eat it regularly because they like the taste. So if that's the case, it would be okay, because it's Ma'achal Brim, and it's in Kafret, he brings down the Shulchan Aruch, the Ma'achal Brim is Mutar. If another question over here, we have something on there? Okay, so let's take a caller. Yeah, B'chavad, hello?
Yeah, hello?
Yes, hi.
Yeah, my question is there an answer to have in a kosher kitchen two mayonnaise, two ketchup, because it might get sliced, sugar might get lettuce?
Okay, so... Okay, very good question. Do you need to have two ketchups and two mayonnaise? So the Shulchan Aruch does bring such a thing down in Peitet, I think, that if you have a salt shaker, but the salt shakers they had over there was different than our salt shakers, because they had like a small bowl with shaker with salt in it. So he says over here that you need to have one for meat and one for cheese. This is brought down in Tzadik Hei, almost in the end of Tzadik Hei, that you need to have separate ones for each one. But that is such a halacha that you're putting it inside it. So you're dipping it, we're afraid that you're going to dip it inside and it's going to become fleishik. So therefore, you're not allowed to have the same one for both. Now you have a Shulchan Aruch that brings down all the way in the end of Tzadik Hei such a halacha that he allows it, and the Rama only says that you should be machmir lechatchila. When we come into those shakers that come out as we have today, ketchup or as we have those mustard, they're not like this at all. You just take them from the top and you spill it into the food. And therefore, it doesn't become fleshic or milchic. Unless you know it touched, then you have to clean it. But there is a chumra like this that I saw in the Sefer Oel Yaakov, he brings down, that there are those that are machmir to have separate ones. But Mi'ikar Adin, it doesn't, even the shakers themselves, we saw in the Rama, that it's only a chumra. And to be machmir more than that, and to have that thing spilling from on top, that's all. But although it's a chumra on chumra, as I'm saying right now, we need to know that that's only when you use it on top of food on the plate or things like that. But if you're using all kind of spices on top of pots that are on the fire, then it becomes much more problematic, because you're taking that spice and you're pouring over a hot pot, and the steam from the pot is coming into the spices, and the steam has a din of ze'ah. Ze'ah has a din just like the food itself, especially if it comes out from liquid. This is how the Prima Gadim says and the Rambam. And therefore, the Shulchan Aruch in Tzadik Bet says it would become, the end of Tzadik Bet, it would become, let's say, fleishik, and the spice would become fleishik, because it goes into the spice. And for that, definitely one should have separate ones. Next question? Yeah, go ahead. Chavod. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, are you allowed to take a broom and screw it together on Shabbos?
Well, if the broom is tied up together well, then it could be a Isur Doraita of making a keli on Shabbat. And therefore, even if it's not screws very well, Chachamim said you're not allowed, Shema Itka, and therefore the answer to your question is no, it's not allowed. Next question, Uchavad, hello? Hello?
Yeah, hello?
Yeah, hi.
I want to know, what's better, is trumpet davening?
I can't hear you well, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Can you speak closer to the phone?
Because a person comes late, so you're supposed to, it's better to see the whole Zimra, or to skip and
Should a person skip Sukkah Dezimra? We had this question about a month ago. We said that the Shulchan Aruch has a whole list of how you should skip when you come late to Shul Sukkah Dezimra. And the Sha'arei Tshuva said that this is only when you do it randomly, but if you're going to do it on a regular basis, that's davar, that's asur, and therefore you should do the whole Sukkah Dezimra from the start to till the end, even if you're going to miss Tfilah B'Tzibur. Ol Etzion brings that idea as well, just like that. Next question, please. Hello?
Very well.
Hello? Okay, next.
The question is, we have a problem in the kitchen with the water, and right now we're cleaning all the pots and all the stuff for the kitchen in the bathroom. So what is what we need to do, like after they fix the kitchen, if we need to put it in the tefillah again or...
Taking something to the bathroom has no problem whatsoever. There's someone that want to be machmir for taking food into the bathroom that's brought down in some of the Hasidic admurim. And from there, it's nishtrevrev that people are very careful not to bring food into the bathroom. But if you did bring food into the bathroom, so there's a chumra like this to wash it afterwards. But we're talking about plates. You don't, nothing happens. The bathrooms are perfectly fine to bring in plates in there. And even more so today, bathrooms that they considered maybe like Bet Kiseh de Parsai, the Chazon Ish, and many, many of the Chonim were mesupak. Maybe it's Bet Kiseh de Parsai, since you flush and everything is clean right afterwards. And it's very similar to Bet Kiseh de Parsai that the Shulchan Aruch says, that it doesn't have din of a beta kiseh, and also the fact that today things are very clean, the Abi Omer brings down like this as well. So there's no reason to be machmir at all, especially that it has nothing to do with taking to the mikveh. Mikveh you take only after you bought something from a goy. But if, let's say, you take a keli and you can do it whatever you want, once it was made by a yid, or you took it to the mikveh already, nothing would require you to take it to the mikveh or do anything else. You can just take those plates and use them as long as they're clean and they're not dirty, and enjoy them. Thank you very much. Everybody should have Shabbat Shalom. This is the Jewish Radio, the show of Lecha Dodi. My name is Rabbi Shai Tahan.